Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Ryan, and today we have with us Dr. Jacintha Caulfield. Jacintha, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm an associate professor of pharmacy practice here at Palm Beach Atlantic University, and I do a lot in the realm of psychiatric pharmacy, especially within the AmCare setting. My big interest is trying to get care integrated for people who have psychiatric conditions and other chronic medical conditions. So trying to get whole patient care in one place.
And having known you, when I came across the study that we're going to talk a little bit about today, it just red flag all of a sudden, we need to have Jacintha come and talk about this. So there was a study that came out in JAMA a couple months ago, and it was called the Association Between Depressive Symptoms and Incident of Cardiovascular Diseases. Could you briefly go over what was discovered by this study?
So what I thought was interesting is that they looked across cohort studies. So they looked at two different places, the Emerging Risk Factors Collaboration and the UK Biobank. And they pulled out a bunch of cohort studies. And within those studies, they looked at whether these patients had been assessed for depression and then what the risk was for different cardiovascular illnesses. And what they found is after they adjusted for all kinds of other risk factors like smoking and obesity and things like that, that there was a log linear correlation between depression scores and risks for things like cardiovascular disease and strokes. So it appears to be independent of those other risk factors.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think that's something that maybe a lot of people in healthcare have seen in the past. So I know that this was something that we saw specifically with schizophrenia and people with schizophrenia being more likely to die from heart disease than the general population. Does it look like based on this new data that this is more applicable to people with many different types of mental health issues or mental illness?
Yes, I would say that it is. I mean, we have known that patients with chronic medical conditions already have a higher risk for depression. So this just kind of adds more credence to that data. And I think it's kind of interesting that they were able to have that log linear correlation, because I'm wondering if severity of depression has an influence on that.
So it's kind of, from what I'm hearing from you, it's kind of a chicken and the egg conundrum though. We don't know if having depression is going to lead to more cardiovascular outcomes, or having the cardiovascular risks and outcomes is leading to the depression. It kind of sounds like, is that true?
Well, we think that it may be both ways. So we do know that people who have mental illness, particularly if it's severe mental illness, don't necessarily have good lifestyle habits. If you have somebody, for example, if you're really depressed, it's not just about emotion. It also affects other functions in your brain. It's hard to motivate to do the right thing. Oftentimes they don't have the energy to do it and don't have the concentration and focus to do it. So things like eating, a healthy eating pattern or exercising, those things fall by the wayside. And also there appears to be a big correlation, particularly for patients with schizophrenia, with an increased risk for smoking. So there's that risk, although that's kind of a whole other thing. It does appear that for some of the psychiatric conditions, that before you put medications on board, and even accounting for differences in lifestyle, there is a risk for an increased risk for metabolic syndrome. I know with bipolar disorder, they're finding that it's kind of an illness of dysregulation, not just the dysregulation of the mood, but also dysregulation of other functions in the body. And I think we'll find more of those correlations as we look at the other conditions as well.
A lot of our listeners may know that my background is in critical care. And I know that we talked a lot about in critical care, once you have one organ system that's starting to go and having issues, you just start to see this cascade where another thing happens and another thing happens, and it makes it harder to go backward. So it seems like this is happening even in a more chronic, and even with systems, that we may not necessarily always associate together. So yes. I think easily we can put together like the renal system and cardiac. Like we easily can link those together, and we don't see as easily how mental health system or, you know, like a neurologic system and cardiac fit together. But it sounds like there's maybe a link there as well.
There is. And it's really interesting because culturally, and even in our own education, we really separate mental health from physical health. I mean, when you think about conditions like depression and anxiety, the most common conditions, we still shove them into a specialty course called psychiatry. So it's isolated from the rest of the body, even though when you're dealing with somebody with depression and anxiety, you're dealing with a whole person. And when you're talking about numbers with regard to psychiatric conditions, 1 out of 4 to 1 out of 5 people in this country has a diagnosable condition. And at some point in their life, 50% of the population will have a diagnosable psychiatric condition. And our own healthcare system has segregated mental health from physical health. And it's kind of a disadvantage for somebody who has one of these conditions, because as you remember, I said that it interferes with focus, motivation, energy levels. And so if you have somebody who has heart disease or a chronic medical condition, and then you drop a psychiatric condition on top of it, now you've got a whole nother layer of medical appointments that they need to keep track of. And instead of making it easier for those folks and trying to integrate everything together, they're having to juggle a whole different part of our healthcare system. So we have to teach ourselves as health professionals to look at the whole patient and be comfortable with the whole patient.
You know, that brings up something really interesting that I'm just now thinking of is, so I work at PBA and I'm on the PBA insurance, and we have a totally different company that handles our mental health insurance as compared to the rest of our health insurance. It's a totally different provider for insurance. And I'm just now thinking that's weird. If you think about it, it's like, I don't have a separate health insurance that takes care of, you know, like my psychological conditions or whatever. Mm-hmm. So why did we separate out this one body system?
There's also a tremendous amount of stigma that goes with mental health diagnoses. And it goes on at like 3 different levels. You know, it goes on at the structural level with our, you know, legislation and you know, how we handle that. It goes on kind of more at our societal level in terms of how it gets portrayed in the media, you know, and in movies and all of that. But there's the biggest part of stigma is self-stigma. And the more I work in the mental health field, the more I realize that we stigmatize ourselves with regard to this. And of course, stigmatize others. We kind of put that off in a corner. And I think we feel intimidated about trying to help somebody who has one of those conditions. What do we do for them? And I think we need to have more conversations about how do we make it as comfortable to deal with a mental health crisis as we do with a physical health crisis. And there are actually classes that help us with that. So I don't know if you've heard of mental health first aid.
I'm certified. Ryan, I don't know, are you certified in mental health first aid?
I'm actually not familiar with that. I'd love to hear more about it. And I'm sure many of our listeners would as well.
I'm actually a mental health first aid instructor. And so to kind of preface, so if we were all in the same room together and I passed out on the floor, what would be the first thing you guys do?
Run through the list for CPR, right?
I mean, exactly. Yeah. Breathing, pulse. Do I need to start CPR? Boom, boom, boom. We know what to do. What if I had a panic attack? Would you know what to do? But that happens all the time. So what mental health first aid was actually first developed in Australia in 2000 to do for mental health crises exactly what CPR has done for physical health crises in basic life support classes. So it's an 8-hour class. It can be done entirely remotely. And it's designed A, to decrease stigma, and B, to familiarize people with what the common symptoms are of mental health conditions and how to help those who have them. So you learn about what does psychosis look like? What does panic disorder look like? How can you assess for suicide? And beyond just recognizing it, what do you do when you encounter somebody who has these conditions? So it actually runs through this. And it's a class for anyone. It can be for, you know, a family member, it can be for the lay public, police officers, healthcare providers, the whole full range. Part of what it does is it helps to remove stigma. One of the other things that I really think it does that's cool though is for first aiders. It actually walks them through a self-care plan. So you actually learn about your own self-care while you're doing it.
That sounds really beneficial. I'm definitely looking into that moving forward. I'd like to become certified as well.
So you can go to, I think it's mentalhealthfirstaid.org is the website.
Is there anything else that you would recommend for our community pharmacists or maybe our general hospitalists that can help kind of turn the tide on this trend of not looking at the whole patient when we're thinking of mental health?
Well, I know that Walgreens at one point, I don't know if they still are doing it or not, but they actually had an initiative where they were going to make mental health screenings more available to their patients. But those mental health screenings that they were offering are freely available to the public. So there are two big organizations that advocate for mental health. One of them is NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. They're probably the more prominent of the two. And they tend to be more for people who live with the conditions or their family members. And they're a fantastic source of information. NAMI, and I'm kind of doing an aside, I'll get to the point here in a minute. NAMI actually has a page that's maintained by the College of Psychiatric and Neurologic Pharmacists, so cpnp.org. They maintain a page of mental health medications. And the pharmacists of CPNP have actually written those information leaflets that patients can go and access. But there's another mental health association that I think it's overlooked more, but I think it's very valuable to know about, and that's Mental Health America. The reason I think they're valuable is that they don't just address people who live with these diagnoses. They're also very, very pro-preventative care. As a matter of fact, they have a whole movement called B4, so the letter B, number four, stage four. Stage four being, so if you think of like stage four cancer, you know, that's like end stage cancer. So they've kind of done something similar for mental health with stage four being the most severe stage. So we're trying to catch mental illness in that stage one, in more the preventative or the very beginning stage. So Mental Health America is very focused on preventative health, not just what happens after you get a diagnosis. And you can actually go to Mental Health America's national site and take a mental health screening. So I think at Walgreens, they were going to have an area where people could take the screening and then talk with a pharmacist. But there's no reason why it would have to be Walgreens. This is certainly something, I mean, it's such a strength of independent pharmacists to have that individual patient connection to begin with. I think it's a service that could be very easily added in a pharmacy setting like that.
Jacinta, this is great information. Thank you so much for sharing it. Is anything else you would like to share before we let you go today?
Well, you know, the other thing that I think we need to be focusing on is that our patients are not the only ones who struggle with mental health conditions. It's an epidemic among health professionals. So we're always working to help our patients, but we can't neglect our own mental health. And the levels of burnout within our own profession, I mean, we know more about physicians and nurses, but we now know that levels of burnout among pharmacists are just tremendous. The most recent survey I've seen said that community pharmacists are probably at about 75% with regard to risk for burnout. And so we need to be taking care of ourselves. And there's a couple things to that. Number one, both ASHP and APHA have their own well-being pages that you can go to help with your own well-being. But I would really also encourage people to go to Mental Health America, because they have whole pages for healthcare providers on that. So they've been doing this for years. And there are a number of different skills that we can take from the mental health community into our own community to help our own mental health. So, and I think that's particularly true with the pandemic.
I think that's really good information, Jacinta. Thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure being here.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thank you, everyone.